Someone who takes to heart the instruction of this book about Dzogchen and its message about dying may be inspired to seek, find, and follow a qualified master, and undertake to commit him or herself to a complete training. The heart of the Dzogchen training is two practices, Tekchö and Tergel, which are indispensable for a deep understanding of what happens during the Bardo's. The complete explanation of these practices is only given from a master to disciple when the disciple has made a wholehearted commitment to the teachings and reached a certain stage of development. It cannot be stressed too often that the path of Dzogchen can only be followed under the direct guidance of a qualified master. As the Dalai Lama says, one fact that you must bear in mind is that the practices of Dzogchen, such as Tekchö and Tergel, can only be achieved through the guidance of an experienced master and through receiving the inspiration and blessing from a living person who has that realization.
The most essential thing in life is to establish an unafraid, heartfelt communication with others, and it is never more important than with a dying person. Often the dying person feels reserved and insecure, and is not sure of your intentions when you first visit. So don't feel anything extraordinary is supposed to happen. Just be natural and relaxed. Be yourself. Once trust and confidence have been established, the atmosphere becomes relaxed, and this will allow the dying person to bring up the things he or she really wants to talk about. Encourage the person warmly to feel as free as possible to express thoughts, fears, and emotions about dying and death. When the dying person is finally communicating his or her most private feelings, do not interrupt, deny, or diminish what the person is saying. The terminally ill or dying are in the most vulnerable situation of their lives, and you will need all your skill and resources of sensitivity and warmth and loving compassion to enable them to reveal themselves. Learn to listen, and learn to receive in silence, an open, calm silence that makes the other person feel accepted. It is essential not to take anything too personally. When you least expect it, dying people can make you the target of all their anger and blame. Do not imagine that this rage is really aimed at you. Realizing what fear and grief it springs from will stop you from reacting to it in ways that might damage your relationship. Sometimes you may be tempted to preach to the dying or to give them your own spiritual formula. Avoid this temptation absolutely, especially when you suspect that it is not what the dying person wants. Remember, your task is not to convert anyone to anything, but to help the person in front of you get in touch with his or her own strength, confidence, faith, and spirituality, whatever it might be. Of course, if the person is really open to spiritual matters and really wants to know what you think about them, don't hold back either. Do not expect too much from yourself, or expect your help to produce miraculous results in the dying person, or save them. Also, don't be distressed if your help seems to be having very little effect, and the dying person does not respond. We cannot know the deeper effects of our care. A dying person most needs to be shown as unconditional love as possible, released from all expectations. Don't think you have to be an expert in any way. Be natural. Be yourself. Be a true friend. And the dying person will be reassured that you are really with them, communicating with them simply as an equal, as one human being to another. Showing the dying person unconditional love in some situations is far from easy. We may have a long history of suffering with that person. We may feel guilty about what we have done to the person in the past, or anger and resentment at what the person has done to us. Here are two very simple ways in which you can release the love within you toward the dying person. First, look at the dying person in front of you and think of that person as just like you, with the same needs, the same fundamental desire to be happy and avoid suffering, the same loneliness, the same fear of the unknown, the same secret areas of sadness, the same half-acknowledged feelings of helplessness. You'll find that if you really do this, your heart will open toward the person, and love will be present between you. The second way, even more powerful, is to put yourself directly and unflinchingly in the dying person's place. Imagine that you are on that bed before you, facing your death. Imagine that you are there in pain and alone. Then really ask yourself, what would you most need? What would you most like? What would you really wish from the friend in front of you? If you do these two practices, you will probably find that what the dying person wants is what you would most want, to be really loved and accepted. People who are very sick long to be touched, long to be treated as living people and not diseases. A great deal of consolation can be given to the very ill simply by touching their hands, looking into their eyes, gently massaging them, or holding them in your arms, or breathing in the same rhythm gently with them. Often we forget that the dying are losing their whole world, their house, their jobs, their relationships, their body, and their mind. They're losing everything. How could anyone dying not be sometimes sad, sometimes panicked, sometimes angry? Dying will bring out many repressed emotions, sadness or numbness or guilt or even jealousy of those who are still well. Help the person not to repress these emotions when they rise. Be with the person as the waves of pain and grief break, with acceptance, time and patient understanding. The emotions slowly subside and return the dying person to that ground of serenity, calm, and sanity that is most deeply and truly theirs. Always remember one thing, that the person in front of you dying is always somewhere inherently good. Whatever rage or emotion arises, however momentarily shocking or horrifying these may be, focusing on that inner goodness will give you the control and perspective you need to be as helpful as possible. Don't judge them by whatever emotions arise. This acceptance of yours will release the dying person to be as uninhibited as he or she needs to be. Treat the dying person as if they were what they are sometimes capable of being, open, loving, and generous. People often ask, should we tell people that they are dying? Yes, as quietly, as kindly, as sensitively, and as skillfully as possible. People instinctively know they are dying, but count on others, their doctor or loved ones, to confirm it. If they don't, the dying person may think it is because family members cannot cope with the news. And then the dying person won't bring up the subject either. This lack of honesty will make him or her feel only more isolated and more anxious. If the dying are not told the truth, how can they prepare themselves for death? From the point of view of a spiritual practitioner, dying is believed to be a great opportunity for people to come to terms with their whole lives. And many, many individuals take this opportunity in the most inspiring way, to change themselves and come closer to their own deepest truth. You cannot help a dying person until you have acknowledged how their fear of dying disturbs you and brings up your most uncomfortable fears. Caring for the dying is itself a deep contemplation and reflection on your own death. Being aware of your own fears about dying will help you immeasurably to be aware of the fears of the dying person. One of the fears that we can most easily dispel is the anxiety we all have about unmitigated pain in the process of dying. physical suffering should be kept to a minimum. A study at St. Christopher's Hospice in London has shown that given the right care, 98% of patients can have a peaceful death. The hospice movement has developed a variety of ways of managing pain by using various combinations of drugs and not simply narcotics. The Buddhist masters speak of the need to die consciously, with as lucid, unblurred, and serene a mental mastery as possible. Keeping pain under control without clouding the dying person's consciousness is the first prerequisite for this, and now it can be done. Everyone should be entitled to that simple help at this most demanding moment of passage. Another anxiety the dying person often has is that of leaving unfinished business. The masters tell us that we should die peacefully, without grasping, yearning, and attachment. This cannot fully happen if the unfinished business of a lifetime, as far as possible, is not cleared. Sometimes you will find that people hold on to life and are afraid to let go and die, because they have not come to terms with what they have been and done. And when a person dies harboring guilt or bad feelings towards others, those who survive him suffer even more deeply in their grief. It is never too late to heal the pain of the past. Even after enormous pain and abuse, people can find a way to forgive each other. The moment of death has a grandeur, solemnity, and finality that can make people re-examine all their attitudes and be more open and ready to forgive when before they could not bear to. Even at the very end of a life, the mistakes of a life can be undone. It is not only the tensions that you have to learn to let go of, but the dying person as well. If you are attached and cling to the dying person, you can bring him or her a lot of unnecessary heartache and make it very hard for the person to let go and die naturally. Sometimes the dying person can linger on many months or weeks longer than the doctors expected and experience tremendous physical suffering. For such a person to be able to let go and die peacefully, he or she needs to hear two explicit verbal assurances from loved ones. First, they must give the person permission to die. And second, they must reassure the person they will be all right after he or she has gone, and that there is no need to worry about them. Sometimes people ask, "What should I say to my child about the death of her relative?" Be sensitive, but tell the truth. Don't let the child think that death is something strange or terrifying. Let her take part as far as possible in the life of the dying person and answer honestly any questions the child might pose. A child's directness and innocence can actually bring a sweetness, lightness, and even sometimes a humor into the pain of dying. Encourage the child to pray for the dying person, and so feel that he or she is really doing something to help. And after the death has taken place, make sure that you give the child special attention and affection. Wherever possible, people should die at home, because it is at home that the majority of people are likely to feel most comfortable. And the peaceful death that the Buddhist masters advise is easiest to obtain in familiar surroundings. But if someone has to die in hospital, there is a great deal that you, the loved ones, can do to make that death as easy and inspiring as possible. Bring in plants, flowers, pictures, photographs of loved ones, drawings by children and grandchildren, or a cassette player with musical tapes. Or, if it's possible, home-cooked meals. You might even get permission for children to visit or for loved ones to stay overnight. If the dying person is a Buddhist or a member of another faith, friends could make a small shrine in his or her room with inspiring pictures or images. When a person is very close to death, request that the hospital staff do not disturb him or her so often and that they stop taking tests. Being in an intensive care unit will make a peaceful death very difficult, and hardly allow for spiritual practice at the moment of death. If you can, you should arrange with the doctor to be told when there is no possibility of the person recovering, and then request to have them moved to a private room, if the dying person wishes it, with the monitors disconnected. Make sure that the staff knows and respects the dying person's wishes, especially if he or she does not wish to be resuscitated. And make sure that the staff knows, too, to leave the body undisturbed after death for as long as possible. In a modern hospital, of course, it is not possible to leave the body alone for the 3-day period that was customary in Tibet, but every support of silence and peace should be given to the dead to help them begin their journey after death. Try to make certain also that while the person is actually in the final stages of dying, all injections and all invasive procedures of any kind are discontinued. These can cause anger, irritation, and pain, and for the mind of the dying person to be as calm as possible in the moments before death is absolutely crucial. Most people die in a state of unconsciousness. One fact we have learned from the near-death experience is that comatose and dying patients may be much more aware of things around them than we realize. This shows the importance of talking positively and frequently to a dying person or to a person in a coma. Conscious, alert, and actively loving care for the dying person must go on until the last moments of his or her life, and even beyond. There is no greater gift of charity you can give than helping a person to die well. Caring for the dying makes you poignantly aware not only of their mortality, but also of your own. So many veils and illusions separate us from the stark knowledge that we are dying. When we finally know we are dying, and all other sentient beings are dying with us, we start to have a burning, almost heartbreaking sense of the fragility and preciousness of each moment and each being. And from this can grow a deep, clear, limitless compassion for all beings. Everything that has been said up till now about caring for the dying could perhaps be summed up in 2 words, love and compassion. What is compassion? It is not simply a sense of sympathy or caring for the person suffering. It is also a sustained and practical determination to do whatever is possible and necessary to help alleviate their suffering. We may say, and even half believe, that compassion is marvelous, but in practice, our actions are deeply uncompassionate and bring us and others mostly frustration and distress, and not the happiness we are all seeking for. What do we imagine will make us happy? A canny, self-seeking, resourceful selfishness, the selfish protection of ego, which can, as we all know, make us at moments extremely brutal. But in fact, the complete reverse is true. Self-grasping and self-cherishing are seen, when you really look at them, to be the root of all harm to others, and also of all harm to ourselves. All those negative thoughts, emotions, desires, and actions that are the cause of our negative karma are engendered by self-grasping and self-cherishing. They are the dark, powerful magnet that attracts to us, life after life, every obstacle, every misfortune, every anguish, every disaster, and so they are the root cause of all the sufferings of samsara. You can have no greater ally in this war against your greatest enemy, your own self-grasping and self-cherishing, than the practice of compassion. It is compassion, dedicating ourselves to others, taking on their suffering instead of cherishing ourselves, that hand in hand with the wisdom of egolessness destroys most effectively and most completely that ancient attachment to a false self that has been the cause of our endless wandering in samsara. That is why in our tradition we see compassion as the source and essence of enlightenment and the heart of enlightened activity. To realize the wisdom of compassion is to see with complete clarity its benefits, as well as the damage that its opposite has done to us. we need to make a very clear distinction between what is in our ego's self-interest and what is in our ultimate interest. It is from mistaking one for the other that all our suffering comes. Compassion, then, is the best protection. It is also, as the great masters of the past have always known, the source of all healing. Suppose you have a serious or life-threatening illness. By taking on the sickness of those with a similar condition, with a mind full of compassion, you will, beyond any doubt, purify the past negative karma that is the cause, now and in the future, of the continuation of your suffering. In Tibet, there were many extraordinary cases of people who, when they heard they were dying of a terminal illness, gave away everything they had and went to the cemetery to die. There, they practiced taking on the suffering of others. And what is amazing is that instead of dying, they returned home fully healed. Working with the dying gives all who do so a direct opportunity to practice compassion in action, and in the situation where it is probably most deeply needed of all. Your compassion can have three essential benefits for the dying person. First, because it is opening your heart, you will find it easier to show the dying person the unconditional love they need so much. On a deeper spiritual level, if you try to embody compassion and act out of the heart of compassion, you will create an atmosphere in which the other person can be inspired to consider the spiritual dimension or even take up spiritual practice. On the deepest level of all, if you do constantly practice compassion for the dying person and in turn inspire them to do the same, you might not only heal them spiritually, but perhaps even physically too. And you will discover for yourself, with wonder, what all the spiritual masters know, that the power of compassion has no bounds. The practice of Tonglen, which in Tibetan means giving and receiving, is one of the most useful and powerful. When you feel yourself locked in upon yourself, Tonglen opens you to the truth of suffering of others. When your heart is blocked, it destroys those forces that are obstructing it. And when you feel estranged from the person who is in pain before you, or bitter or despairing, it helps you to find within yourself and then to reveal the loving, expansive radiance of your own true nature. No other practice I know is as effective in destroying the self-grasping, self-cherishing, self-absorption of the ego, which is the root of all suffering and the root of all hard-heartedness. Before you can truly practice Tonglen, you have to be able to evoke compassion in yourself. That is harder than we often imagine, because the sources of our love and compassion are sometimes hidden from us, and we may have no ready access to them. Fortunately, there are several special techniques that the Buddhist training of the mind in compassion has developed to help us evoke our own hidden love. Out of the enormous range of methods available, Sogyal Rinpoche has selected the following ones and has ordered them in a particular way so as to be of the greatest possible use to people in the modern world. First is the practice of loving kindness. Go back in your mind and recreate, almost visualize, a love that someone gave you that really moved you, perhaps in your childhood. You might remember your mother and her lifelong devotion to you, or you could think of your grandmother or grandfather, or anyone who had been deeply kind to you in your life. Remember a particular instance when they really showed you love, and you felt their love vividly. Now let that feeling arise again in your heart and infuse you with gratitude. As you do so, your love will go out naturally to that person who evoked it. You will remember then that even though you may not always feel that you have been loved enough, you were loved genuinely once. Knowing that now will make you feel again that you are, as that person made you feel then, worthy of love and really lovable. Let your heart open now and let love flow from it. Then extend this love to all beings. Begin with those who are closest to you. Then extend your love to friends and to acquaintances, then to neighbors, to strangers, and then even to those whom you don't like or have difficulties with, even those you might consider as your enemies, and finally to the whole universe. Let this love become more and more boundless. The all-inclusive, unbiased view of equanimity is really the starting point and the basis of the path of compassion. You will find that this practice unseals a spring of love, and by that unsealing in you of your own loving-kindness, you will find that it will inspire the birth of compassion. Then comes the practice of compassion, considering yourself the same as others. One powerful way to evoke compassion is to think of others as exactly the same as you. After all, the Dalai Lama explains, all human beings are the same, made of human flesh, bones, and blood. We all want happiness and want to avoid suffering. Further, we have an equal right to be happy. In other words, it is important to realize our sameness as human beings. Say, for example, you are having difficulties with a loved one, such as your mother or father, husband or wife, lover or friend. How helpful and revealing it can be to consider the other person, not in his or her role of mother or father or husband, but simply as another you, another human being, with the same feelings as you, the same desire for happiness, the same fear of suffering. Thinking of the person as a real person, exactly the same as you, will open your heart to him or her and give you more insight into how to help. If you consider others just the same as yourself, it will help you to open up your relationships and give them a new and richer meaning. The next method is exchanging yourself for others. When someone is suffering and you find yourself at a loss to know how to help, put yourself unflinchingly in his or her place. Imagine as vividly as possible what you would be going through if you were suffering the same pain. Ask yourself, how would I feel? How would I want my friends to treat me? What would I most want from them? When you exchange yourself for others in this way, you are directly transferring your cherishing from its usual object, yourself, to other beings. So exchanging yourself for others is a very powerful way of loosening the hold on you of the self-cherishing and the self-grasping of ego, and so of releasing the heart of your compassion. Another moving technique for arousing compassion for a person who is suffering is to imagine one of your dearest friends or someone you really love in that person's place. Evoking this power of compassion in us is not always easy. Sometimes the simplest ways are the best and the most direct. Every day, life gives us innumerable chances to open our hearts, if we can only take them. An old woman passes you with a sad and lonely face, swollen veins on her legs, and two heavy plastic bags full of shopping she can hardly carry. A shabbily dressed old man shuffles in front of you in line at the post office. A boy on crutches looks harried and anxious as he tries to cross the street in the afternoon traffic. A dog lies bleeding to death on the road. A young girl sits alone, sobbing hysterically in the subway. Any one of these sights could open the eyes of your heart to the fact of vast suffering in the world. Let it. Don't waste the love and grief it arouses. In the moment you feel compassion welling up in you, don't brush it aside. Don't shrug it off and try quickly to return to normal. Don't be afraid of your feeling or embarrassed by it, or allow yourself to be distracted from it, or let it run aground in apathy. Be vulnerable. Use that quick, bright uprush of compassion. Focus on it. Go deep into your heart and meditate on it. Develop it. Enhance and deepen it. By doing this, you will realize how blind you have been to suffering, how the pain that you are experiencing or seeing now is only a tiny fraction of the pain of the world. All beings everywhere suffer. Let your heart go out to them all in spontaneous and immeasurable compassion, and direct that compassion along with the blessing of all the Buddhas to the alleviation of suffering everywhere. When you meditate deeply enough on compassion, there will arise in you a strong determination to alleviate the suffering of all beings, and an acute sense of responsibility toward that noble aim. There are two ways, then, of mentally directing this compassion and making it active. The first way is to pray to all the Buddhas and enlightened beings from the depths of your heart that everything you do, all your thoughts, words, and deeds, should only benefit beings and bring them happiness. In the words of one great prayer, "Bless me into usefulness." Pray that you benefit all who come in contact with you and help them transform their suffering and their lives. The second and universal way is to direct whatever compassion you have to all beings by dedicating all your positive actions and spiritual practice to their welfare, and especially toward their enlightenment. For when you meditate deeply on compassion, a realization dawns in you that the only way for you to be of complete help to other beings is for you to gain enlightenment. From that, a strong sense of determination and universal responsibility is born, and the compassionate wish arises in you at that moment to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all others. This compassionate wish is called bodhicitta in Sanskrit. Bodhi means our enlightened essence, and citta means heart. So we could translate it as the heart of our enlightened mind. To awaken and develop the heart of the enlightened mind is to ripen steadily the seed of our Buddha nature. That seed that in the end, when our practice of compassion has become perfect and all-embracing, will flower majestically into Buddhahood. Bodhicitta, then, is the spring and source and root of the entire spiritual path. Now that you have been introduced to the various methods of evoking compassion, and to the importance and power of compassion itself, you will have the motivation, the understanding, and the tools to do the practice of Tonglen for your greatest benefit, and the greatest benefit of others. It might seem hard to imagine taking on the sufferings of others, and especially of sick and dying people, without first building in yourself a strength and confidence of compassion. This is why it is advised to begin the Tonglen practice by first practicing it on yourself. Before you send out love and compassion to others, you uncover, deepen, create, and strengthen them in yourself, and heal yourself of any reticence or distress or anger or fear that might create an obstacle to practicing Tonglen wholeheartedly. The best way to begin this practice is by evoking and resting in the nature of mind. When you rest in the nature of mind and see all things directly as empty, illusory, and dreamlike, you are resting in the state of absolute bodhicitta, the true heart of the enlightened mind. The teachings compare absolute bodhicitta to an inexhaustible treasury of generosity. Compassion, in its profoundest sense, is the natural radiance of the nature of mind, the skillful means that rises from the heart of wisdom. Begin by sitting and bringing the mind home. Allow all your thoughts to settle, neither inviting them nor following them. Close your eyes if you wish. When you feel really calm and centered, alert yourself slightly and begin the practice. The first stage is environmental Tonglen. We all know how the moods and atmospheres of our mind have a great hold on us. Sit with your mind and feel its mood and atmosphere. If you feel your mood is uneasy or the atmosphere is dark, then as you breathe in, mentally absorb whatever is unwholesome. And as you breathe out, mentally give out calm, clarity, and joy, so purifying and healing the atmosphere and environment of your mind. The second stage is Tonglen for oneself. For the purposes of this exercise, divide yourself into two aspects, A and B. A is the aspect of you that is whole, compassionate, warm and loving, like a true friend, really willing to be there for you, responsive and open to you, without ever judging you, whatever your faults or shortcomings. B is the aspect of you that has been hurt, that feels misunderstood and frustrated, bitter or angry, who might have been, for example, unjustly treated or abused as a child, or has suffered in relationships or been wronged by society. Now, as you breathe in, imagine that A opens his or her heart completely and warmly and compassionately accepts and embraces all of B's suffering and negativity and pain and hurt. Moved by this, B opens his or her heart, and all pain and suffering melt away in this compassionate embrace. As you breathe out, imagine A sending out to B all his or her healing love, warmth, trust, comfort, confidence, happiness, and joy. The third stage is Tonglen in a living situation. Imagine vividly a situation where you have acted badly, one about which you feel guilty and which you wince even to think about. Then, as you breathe in, accept total responsibility for your actions in that particular situation, without in any way trying to justify your behavior. Acknowledge exactly what you have done wrong, and wholeheartedly ask for forgiveness. Now, as you breathe out, send out reconciliation, forgiveness, healing, and understanding. So you breathe in blame and breathe out the undoing of harm. You breathe in responsibility, breathe out healing, forgiveness, and reconciliation. The fourth stage is Tonglen for others. Imagine someone to whom you feel very close, particularly someone who is suffering and in pain. As you breathe in, imagine you take in all their suffering and pain with compassion, and as you breathe out, send your warmth, healing, love, joy, and happiness streaming out to them. Now, just as in the practice of loving kindness, gradually widen the circle of your compassion to embrace first other people, whom you also feel very close to, then those whom you feel indifferent about, then those you dislike or have difficulty with, then even those whom you feel are actively monstrous and cruel. Allow your compassion to become universal and to fold in its embrace all sentient beings, all beings, in fact, without any exception. What has just been given is a complete preliminary practice to the main Tonglen. In the Tonglen practice of giving and receiving, we take on, through compassion, all the various mental and physical sufferings of all beings, their fear, frustration, pain, anger, guilt, bitterness, doubt and rage, and we give them, through love, all our happiness and well-being, peace of mind, healing and fulfillment. Before you begin this practice, sit quietly and bring your mind home. Then, making use of any of the methods I have described, meditate deeply on compassion. Summon and invoke the presence of all the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and enlightened beings, so that through their inspiration and blessing, compassion may be born in your heart. Imagine in front of you, as vividly and as poignantly as possible, someone you care for who is suffering. Try and imagine every aspect of the person's pain and distress. Then, as you feel your heart opening in compassion toward the person, imagine that all of his or her sufferings manifest together and gather into a great mass of hot, black, grimy smoke. Now, as you breathe in, Visualize that this mass of black smoke dissolves with your in-breath into the very core of your self-grasping at your heart. There it destroys completely all traces of self-cherishing, thereby purifying all your negative karma. Imagine now that your self-cherishing has been destroyed, so that the heart of your enlightened mind, your bodhicitta, is fully revealed. As you breathe out, then imagine that you are sending out its brilliant cooling light of peace, joy, happiness, and ultimate well-being to your friend in pain, and that its rays are purifying all their negative karma. Imagine, as Shantideva suggests, that your bodhicitta has transformed your heart, or your whole body and being itself, into a dazzling, wish-fulfilling jewel, a jewel that can grant the desires and wishes of anyone, and provide exactly what he or she longs for and needs. So at the moment the light of your bodhicitta streams out to touch your friend in pain, it is essential to feel a firm conviction that all of his or her negative karma has been purified, and a deep, lasting joy that he or she has been totally freed of suffering and pain. Then, as you go on breathing normally in and out, continue steadily with this practice. Practicing Tonglen on one friend in pain helps you to begin the process of gradually widening the circle of compassion, to take on the suffering and purify the karma of all beings, and to give them all your happiness, well-being, joy, and peace of mind. You can do the main Tonglen practice for your dying friend. Imagine now, in the place of your friend in pain, the person who is dying. Go through exactly the same stages as in the main Tonglen. You may be asking yourself, if I take in the sufferings and pain of others, won't I risk harming myself? If you feel at all hesitant and feel that you don't yet have the strength or courage of compassion to do the practice of Tonglen wholeheartedly, don't worry. Just imagine yourself doing it, saying in your mind, as I breathe in, I am taking on the suffering of my friend or others, and as I breathe out, I am giving him or them happiness and peace. Doing this might create the climate in your mind that could inspire you to begin practicing Tonglen directly. You can also do Tonglen in the form of a simple prayer, deeply aspiring to help beings. May I be able to take on the suffering of others. May I be able to give my well-being and happiness to them. This prayer will create auspicious conditions for the awakening of your power to do Tonglen in the future. The one thing you should know for certain is that the only thing that Tonglen could harm is the one thing that has been harming you the most, your own ego, your self-grasping, self-cherishing mind, which is the root of suffering. If you practice Tonglen as often as possible, this self-grasping mind will get weaker and weaker, and your true nature, compassion, will be given a chance to emerge more and more strongly. The stronger and greater your compassion, the stronger and greater your fearlessness and confidence. Spiritual care is not a luxury for a few. It is the essential right of every human being, as essential as political liberty, medical assistance, and equality of opportunity. In the West, great mental suffering arises from the fear of dying, whether or not this fear is acknowledged. How reassuring it would be for people if they knew that when they lay dying, they would be cared for with loving insight. As it is, our culture is so heartless in its expediency and its denial of any real spiritual value that people, when faced with terminal illness, feel terrified that they are simply going to be thrown away like useless goods. How do we answer a dying person's desperate call for help and reassurance about the meaning of their life? It is amazing how, if you just let people talk, giving them your complete and compassionate attention, they will say things of a surprising spiritual depth, even when they think they don't have any spiritual beliefs. Everyone has their own life wisdom, and when you let a person talk, you allow this life wisdom to emerge. Believe as you sit by the dying person that you are sitting by someone who has the true potential to be a Buddha. Imagine their Buddha nature as a shining and stainless mirror, and all their pain and anxiety a thin grey mist on it that can quickly clear. This will help you to see them as lovable and forgivable, and draw out of you your unconditional love. You will find this attitude will allow the dying person to open remarkably to you. Through the strength and peace and deep compassionate attention of your presence, you will help them awaken their own strength. The quality of your presence at this most vulnerable and extreme moment is all important. Remember, you can do nothing to inspire the person in front of you if you do not inspire yourself first. So when you don't know what to do, when you feel hardly able to do anything to help, then pray and meditate, and as intensely as possible, invoke the Buddha or any other figure whose sacred power you believe in. Summoning all your powers of devotion and faith, see them in glory above the dying person, gazing down at them with love and pouring down light and blessing on them, purifying them of all their past karma and present agony. And as you do this, pray that the person in front of you should be spared further suffering and find peace and liberation. Do this with the deepest concentration and earnestness, and then try to rest in the nature of mind and allow its peace and radiance to permeate the atmosphere of the room. You may be awed by the sense of sacred presence that then establishes itself very naturally, and which in turn inspires the dying person. There are two key points in giving spiritual help to the dying: giving hope and finding forgiveness. Always, when you are with a dying person, dwell on what they have accomplished and done well. Help them to feel as constructive and as happy as possible about their lives. Concentrate on their virtues and not their failings. People who are dying are frequently extremely vulnerable to guilt, regret, and depression. Allow the person to express these freely. Listen to the person and acknowledge what he or she says. At the same time, where appropriate, be sure to remind the person of his or her Buddha nature and encourage the person to try to rest in the nature of mind through the practice of meditation. Especially remind the person that pain and suffering are not all that he or she is. Find the most skillful and sensitive way possible to inspire the person and give him or her hope.